Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning, everybody, and happy Friday. Hey, Jeffrey, have you obtained your turkey yet? Has the turkey been obtained? You got less than a week now.
So that is very much in my mother's control, and I'm all but certain that that would be
there
a yes.
There's a turkey that has been obtained.
As much as I don't plan ahead, my mother does plan ahead.
Well, someone's got to. That works beautifully. Mm-hmm. Worked better when you were her child living in her house. You're still her child.
Yeah, I married a planner as well, so.
I'm going to Costco today. I just want to warn people. Well, I assumed that today would be better than tomorrow or the next day. Don't you think?
Yeah, but you know what would be even better?
Wednesday?
Yeah.
No. Wednesday would not be better. And by Wednesday, you can't thaw the turkey out in time.
Well, what if you get a great deal?
Well, you would get a great deal on a frozen turkey that could not be unthawed in time. So
not with that attitude.
I'll see you people out at Costco. Now, I'm kind of equidistant between the one out on Germantown.
Well, you've come to the right place.
And the one on Winchester. Is there a preference? Do you have a
Germantown Parkway is way better.
Why?
What's parking. The parking at Hacks Cross is a disaster.
I've never had a problem parking at Hacks
Cross.
It is
absolutely
never once. I always park the same.
Do you never get gas there?
But the gas is ridiculous.
It's
I don't get gas at Costco simply because, and I guess
it's too cheap.
This is what you would call privilege.
Mm-hmm.
I look at the line and I say it's not worth it.
No,
it's insanity. Like, I'm just like, I'll pay the extra $2 for my gas. That line is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But do you get gas there?
Oh yeah.
And sometimes
I would say 90% of my gas fill
up. How much cheaper is it?
A considerable amount. I would say at least like 50 cents.
50 cents
per gallon.
Per gallon.
Yeah.
And you got
I got a big boy.
What about 20 gallons? It's not that
25.
Big. What?
25.
25.
And she runs better on premium.
So that's $10 every time you go, you're saving.
Mm-hmm.
That's not meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
Probably worth $10 to wait in the line. But anyway, once you get in the store, aren't they the same?
I think, someone can correct me if I'm wrong, I think Hacks Cross is also a little bit smaller square footage-wise.
I've never noticed any difference. And now I go to Hacks Cross, I think it's closer. Just pop on 385. Head
for you,
there.
Probably. I can buy that.
But I do both. And I'll see you out there, people. I'm doing some Thanksgiving shopping. And
peruse the meat aisle.
I'm
as well,
sure you all
just in case.
Will this
like what if they have like a four pack of ribeyes?
I'll get the four pack of ribeyes. Mm-hmm. I think I'll do that anyway.
Mm-hmm. While you're there. It's insulting not to.
You need, now, in fairness, you need to go to Leaders and get a new, you know, some sort of line of credit in order to pay for ribeyes these days anywhere.
Not at Costco.
Still.
Because I, last week I went, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, I grabbed a steak from the Kroger at Poplar Plaza.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I'm never doing this again. When I just looked at the price.
Costco is cheaper, I think, and 100%. Delicious, but it's still...
I'm just looking at price per pound. Something. That's all I care about.
All right. Today on the radio show, we have Jason Smith in the next segment. We'll talk to him about all manner of things. I presume Memphis Tiger basketball will be included. Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. I didn't talk to Chris about... his, you know, he always does the films.
His weekly preview.
His weekly preview of what's showing in the area.
What we can see and where.
And this week, we, of course, have Glicked.
Yes.
I didn't realize that was the thing. It's like...
I didn't know it was a thing until this week.
Barbenheimer, and then, yes. Right? It's
Gladiator and Wicked.
Gladiator and Wicked. Have you or will you make a point to see either?
So my buddies were just texting right now. We are attempting to actually coordinate to go see Gladiator together.
Well, the men of Idlewild Church, and sadly I couldn't go, the men of Idlewild Church, of which I'm a member.
Did they go last night?
They have and they went last night. And then what they do is they only go to dude movies that they don't think they won't see with their wives. And it's a nice deal that they have organized. And then they go to Huey's. And they rank the movies on a onion ring basis. Four Respect. Onion rings, five onion rings, three onion rings, you know, whatever else. So I don't know how many onion rings Gladiator 2 got. Are you hopeful? Are the reviews good?
I'm not. I'm intentionally not looking at reviews. I don't know if I'm hopeful. Because I do think...
Did you love the original one?
Oh, my gosh, yes. Because I'm a Latin nerd.
I had forgotten that the original one wasn't just an epic... massive hit. It was also Best Picture.
Absolutely.
So it was critically well received as well.
And Joaquin, I believe, won Best Supporting Actor. Like it was critically and commercially successful.
Massive.
Yeah.
Massive movie. Of course, no Russell Crowe. No Joaquin.
No.
But Ridley Scott's back to.
I am worried.
Preside over it.
I am a little bit worried that the absurdity of the first one that you could kind of overlook, I'm a little worried that this one might lean into absurdity too much. Yeah. But I think I'm going
to
be entertained.
We've learned to do, we have a higher absurdity threshold these days. Life has created that for me. I look around at the absurdity and I think, oh, this isn't absurd. Look at real life. And then it helps me be more tolerant of film absurdity. Wicked. Have you seen Wicked the play?
The musical?
Theater musical?
I have not. I think I'm the one.
Yeah, I've seen it. I actually seen it on Broadway, and I saw it at the Orpheum. And really good. Really good. I didn't realize. So, and this is according to Chris's piece in the Daily Memphian from a couple days ago. So Wicked, of course, derives from The Wizard of Oz, right? It's the story of the Bad Witch.
Correct. I believe there was like a novel.
Yeah. What the amazing thing is so originally there was a Wizard of Oz novel.
Yeah.
That came out in 1900. Then there was the Wizard of Oz movie.
Yep.
That came out in 1939. This all according to Chris Harrington. Then there was a novel about the Wicked Witch of the West. It was called, in fact, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West. That was a novel in 1995. So we've got the original novel, Wizard of Oz novel. Then we've got the Wizard of Oz movie. Then we've got the Wicked Witch of the West novel. Then we have the Wicked theater production.
Yep.
And now we've got the Wicked movie.
Yes. So the reason why Wicked was a musical first was the author of the novel, the 95 novel, originally sold the rights to like Paramount, I think. And Paramount never developed a movie out of it. And so but they still owned the rights to it. So to work around it, whoever the producer of the Wicked musical was, he's like, well, we can't make a movie out of this. We can't make a television show out of this, but we can do a musical. And that's how it came to be.
Interesting. It's a very good musical. And so I don't know. Like, I'll make an effort to see him, but I have not been to a lot of films lately. But it's big weekend, Glicked this weekend. We'll talk to Chris about that. Plus, Justin Timberlake's in town, and he's written about a piece in his Essential Memphis Library. He's written about Justin Timberlake album over at the Daily Memphian. So we'll talk to Chris about that. And then, big weekend of college football, Jeffrey. And you will attempt to enrich us by telling us where to bet.
We have a theme this week.
Most important game this week.
I think it has to be Ohio State, Indiana.
It's funny, though. Most important, just like Ole Miss, Florida will be important if Florida. It's important, but it would be particularly, it will be more significant in some ways because it's assumed that Ole Miss will win. But if Florida wins, that becomes very important.
I think it only, but see, in the end, though, that's only like important to the teams behind Ole Miss.
That's true.
I think Ohio State, Indiana, it's important to everybody. The entire playoff.
And what do you think Indiana has to do? What does Indiana have to do if they lose to remain in the playoff?
Keep it around the spread.
Spread is
12 right now.
Okay, lose by 17.
Then you start to get into, well, how that 17 did Ohio State tack late, on a late was it one? Whatever. Was like, yeah, I think you need to get into the second half and think that it's realistic that Indiana.
If Indiana
is in the game.
Loses by 15 or by 17 and they only get to 17 because they tack on a late right. one, they're screwed.
Correct. If you spend most of the game thinking, like, Indiana has no business.
Here's the thing. Ohio State, Indiana has stopped the run effectively. Yeah.
Their defense has been pretty good.
And Ohio State has real problems on the offensive line.
Yes. And they've not been a good offensive line to begin with.
So I tend to think Indiana will hang in, but I'll be interested. Is that on your card?
We have a theme this week.
There's a bunch, though. Arizona State, BYU's interesting.
Yeah, that's a tough one because that's both of my kids. That's a Sophie's choice.
Army, Notre Dame is, I guess,
that's
interesting.
Not, that's not going to be difficult. That's part of the theme.
But it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Ole Miss, Florida, obviously interesting.
I mean, like, here's the thing. Realistically, if Army wins out, this starts to get fascinating. Because if Army wins out, they will be a undefeated conference champion. And are they going to be...
They will have better wins than... Well, they have two wins.
No,
but right now, anyway, after this weekend, they will have better wins than Texas, better wins than Penn State, better wins than
Boise
Miami,
State.
Better wins than Boise State, better wins than... You look at a lot of the teams in the top 10, and they will have a better win than a lot of them.
Correct. Their strength of schedule is still second to last right now.
So fascinating week in college football. We'll get to that as well and a whole bunch of other things. Before I did anything else, by the way, we get to the Memphis Tigers here in 2 seconds as they get the win last night. A couple things that we talked about yesterday fleetingly that I wanted to revisit.
All right.
One is... The Hubie Brown.
Oh, the poll question?
No, the Hubie Brown retirement, right?
Yes. This is his final season.
And now that I've had a chance to go read about it, it's only his final season and that they're going to bring him back for one game.
Yeah.
Right? They're bringing him back for one game. But reading about Hubie, who's 91 years old, he's 91 years old. And he's still going to do, he's been doing basketball games regularly, 91 years old. And now but last year he talked to The Athletic and he had this quote, and I just loved it. I don't think I'm 90 years old, which by the way is true of everybody. Like once you get to be, for me, 63, I don't feel 63. I feel 40, whatever. I don't know what 40 was. When I was 40, I probably didn't feel 40. I probably felt 28, right? But you never sort of...
Whatever the number is, you never feel that.
Maybe there does come a time if you are beset by all kinds of ailments where you feel, I feel every bit of this age. But I certainly don't, and Hubie didn't. I don't think I'm 90 years old, he said. And then he said this, I never get up in the morning and say, geez, I'm 90 years old. What am I going to do today? I'm 90 years old, and I come downstairs, and I get my manila pad out, and I have a list of all the things I'm going to do today. Then at night, I have a list of which games I'm going to watch. Then during the games, I'm going to pick out certain things I'm interested in. It's always the love of the game for me. I just love that. He doesn't get up in the morning and say, oh, hell, I'm 90 years old. He gets up and he gets downstairs. And
what
he gets
games
his,
am I going to watch?
And he gets his...
One of us.
And he gets his... Well, and what I particularly relate to is he gets his manila pad out. I have a yellow legal pad, but it's like...
That's the same thing.
What am I doing
same
today?
Same concept.
Right, same concept. He's like, how am I going to attack today? I loved that. And then the other thing I wanted to say that we talked about yesterday was, in fact, about the poll and Taylor Jenkins and who's the greatest Grizzly coach and whatever. And going back to reflect on how that night went two nights ago, I think what was particularly impressive was that Taylor Jenkins mentioned all of them.
Yeah.
You know, like Taylor Jenkins... certainly doesn't assert that he's greater or less, whatever. He talks about the responsibility of being the head coach of this team and the privilege of following in the footsteps of, and he named them, you know, of Hubie and of Lionel and of Dave Yeager. And I just thought that was impressive and not unexpected, because that is how he seems to roll over there. So I wanted a hat tip him for that. All right, Memphis Tigers. I think we have a solution here, Jeffrey.
Play every game like it's the second half?
No, just for us.
Okay.
Just watch the second half.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right, let's just do something
that
else.
That first half was painful.
Get your manila pad out or whatever else it is. Look at your list, wherever you keep
make
a list
notes,
of things to
make
do.
Make your notes for how much you're going to enjoy the second half.
And things you have to do, and do those things. You know, go for a run. Or read a book, or make the kids lunches for tomorrow.
Literally do anything else.
Or literally do anything else, but watch the first half.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not telling you to abandon the Tigers. Far from it, the whole time.
No, we're telling you to lock in for the second half.
And you can watch the second half. You can be looking forward to the second half, knowing what is going to happen. Knowing that your Tigers, once you get to the second half, are going to roll. And the whole excitement will be, you'll tune in at halftime, and you'll say, I wonder how far back they are today. What did they spot them today?
Mm-hmm.
What sort of a deficit are we going to make up today? This is going to be fun.
You can't overcome the odds if you never have them to begin
you
with.
You know how it's going to end. It's going to end with a magnificent second half and a W. That's how it always ends for the Memphis Tigers. And you don't have to sit through the first half. You can be productive. And if you missed the first half yesterday, well, first of all, you missed a hell of a lot of fouls. My God, there were so many fouls.
And bricks.
Fouls and bricks. But that game had 49 fouls. That game had 58 free throws. It's just ridiculous. But yes, in addition to that, you missed a whole bunch of bricks. It's almost incredible how bad they can be in the first half and then how it changes in the second half. First half, 24% from the floor. First half, 28.6% from three. First half, two assists. First half, 10 turnovers. First half, trail by nine.
Yep.
Like, it's...
You left out 57% from the free throw line.
Just unbelievable. Second half, shooting goes from 24% to 48%.
That seems like double.
Second half, 5 turnovers as opposed to 10 turnovers.
Yep.
Second half, 10 zip run.
Mm-hmm.
10 zip run to open the second half and held San Francisco to missed 15 of the first 18 shot attempts. 15 of the first 18 shot attempts. And so They do what they have to do in the second half, yet again, outscoring San Francisco 46-33, and emerge triumphant. Your thoughts, Jeffrey?
So, in the first half, I think I looked up, it was, I think we were like 10 minutes into the first half, and they had 7 points. And the thing that was, I thought was interesting was, I was like, San Francisco's kind of in trouble because this is about as badly as they can play. And it was still like a one, it was like a single digit game.
Well, and I do think you have to credit a lot of times when you are playing that bad offensively, what do we hear?
The offense affects the defense,
right? You get frustrated. All of a sudden, you're turning the ball over. You're giving up easy baskets, or you're not locking in as much because you're frustrated. And one thing about this team is they never stop guarding.
At all.
They never stop guarding. It's partly why the first half is ugly, because they made it ugly. They made it ugly by missing shots, but then they made it ugly for San Francisco by
everything was painful.
Everything was incredibly painful. They forced 15 turnovers of their own. They scored 18 points off of turnovers. They held San Francisco to 32.8% from the field, 21.4% from three. They were just a pain in the ass. And so the first half could have been much worse than it was, but they're unrelenting in the way that they guard. Now, the question is, or at least one of the questions is why are they so ineffective offensively in the first half? And Penny, I think Parth, honestly, is the only Memphis beat writer who was there last night. So I would urge you to read Parth over in the Daily Memphian. But reading his stuff, well, first Penny said, we got to stop doing this, right? Like we can't
dig it. We can't
keep.
You dig a hole on Monday, you're dead.
Yeah, we can't keep doing this. So that's the one thing. And then he had two different theories about this particular first half. One is they played with a Wilson basketball, but they practiced all week with a Nike basketball. Thought they were going to get a Nike basketball.
I love this take.
Played with a Wilson.
I'm in on this.
That wasn't his biggest one. The biggest theory was dudes didn't practice. Like Haggerty and Hunter didn't practice all week.
Yeah.
So it's hard to just, when you don't practice, it's hard to just step in and be yourself. And P.J. Haggerty obviously was not his normal self from the floor.
I thought he was clutch, though, down the stretch.
Totally clutch down the stretch. And his free throws, 7 of 8 free throws. He was 2 of 9 from the field. The weird thing was, I mean, he made that massive three, but the only two shots he made were threes.
Yep.
Which is not what you expect. Like, he's a guy who gets to the rim and makes shots. He was 0 of 6 from 2. He was...
And that was a lot around the basket, too.
Yeah, yeah. He was just not... He was not himself last night for whatever reason. Still ended 13.7 rebounds. But again, the free throw shooting, clutch down the stretch as, you know, Hunter gets that steal. Haggerty hits the three, and all, you know, they're up 59-56 at that point. And then you go down to the, you know, it's nice to have players who hit free throws.
Yes.
And so do you buy either of those theories for why they
love the basketball theory?
You love the basketball
theory. Love the basketball theory, because you can't prove that one way or the other. I wonder if it's something a little different. I wonder if they're like a slobber knocker football team, and that, all right, it's never going to be pretty,
but they grind you down. But it's the running back who keeps
exactly
boom, like, plunging into the line, like, and then all of a sudden,
2009 Alabama,
they wear you down.
Boa constrictor, and by the second half, because a big part of the scoring in the second half, it wasn't like they made a few more shots, but honestly, it was getting a lot easier shots. It was like the fast breaks that they were getting. And I just wonder if part of the problem is in the first half, all right, they don't wear you down, but in the second half, they just completely grind you.
That could be it. They also were dealing with foul trouble. That was the other thing.
Sure.
Like, it is interesting. They have such a thin roster that now, two fouls, you know what you do in Memphis?
You keep stay playing. On the floor.
You stay, and they never used to do that.
Yeah, I think they're third nationally.
Well, the, if you look at KenPom,
yeah.
Last year, of the minutes that they could have played players who had two fouls, okay, those players played 7.8% of the time.
Yeah, and it's now 35.7%.
And those players now play 35% of the time of the minutes that are available with two fouls. And which also means, by the way, that your best players are playing more minutes.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's that that is a it's you're forced into it, but it does mean that your best players are playing more minutes.
Yes.
So and then obviously the other big story last night was Dane Danger.
Yeah, he was very good.
He was terrific. Didn't start. Came off the bench for the first time. Musa got the start. But he was good. And by the way, he was good from the line, too. He was of 6 of – I mean, there you have P.J. Haggerty, 7-8 from the line, and Dane Danger, 6 of 7 from the line. Finished with 18, 7 rebounds, 3 blocks. Got that big rebound after the missed free throw late that helped. Then he steps to the line and nails the free throws.
Yeah.
Like that was critical for Memphis. And so they get a win that I'm going to go ahead and say it's a significant win. Like it – when I was talking to Gabe about it yesterday, Gabe was of the view that the game itself wasn't that important. It just gives us more information about this team. And while I agree that it gives us more information about this team, and I guess the information would be, what did we learn? I don't know that Dane Danger can be more like, you know, what we hoped he would be. That we learned something there. That the free throw shoot, that the 3-point shooting isn't necessarily going to be the best in the country all year long. Although I think we knew that. It reaffirmed that the defense seems like something you can travel with, right? Like you can count on every night. But I kind of pushed back and I said the game itself is important. This is a team that is going. This is going to be a quality win. And you count quality wins at the end. And so, no, it wasn't. If they'd lost it, it wouldn't have been a disaster. But as we said, they're going to go to Maui. And in Maui, I suspect they'll be favored in one of the three games they play. And so it's kind of nice to have one in your pocket as you're going to Maui.
And you won a game as an underdog.
And you won a game as a 1.5-point underdog.
I mean, to me, I think the biggest takeaway is you were in a game that you had to, like, it game scripted the same way that we've seen other games play out, which is fall behind in the first half, have a big second half. But they didn't have the big second half where they put the game away. And so they got into critical moments in down the stretch, and they had to make winning basketball plays, and they did.
Yeah, nice win. As they continue to, and again, they said it themselves, they're going to have to earn it this year, earn belief. And so now they're 4-0. And they haven't, you know, they've done everything they had to do. They have everything they could do so far. And they seem cohesive. They seem together. They seem committed to the cause. And so we will hope for the best as they head to Maui. The other thing that unfolded last night was the Cleveland Browns rose up, Jeffrey. They rose up and smote the mighty Pittsburgh Steelers 24-19 in a lovely snowfall.
Is that lake effect snow, by the way?
I think it's lake effect snow.
Because that looked like big snowflakes.
Yeah, I think lake effect snow can be any size snowflake, but they did look like big snowflakes. It was a very scenic. I thought it was great.
Snow football is great football.
Now, George Pickens does not believe that. Here's what he said. After losing, he said...
Let me guess. He put it on himself.
No.
No, not George.
I don't really think the Cleveland Browns are a good team at all.
That's how you really feel.
I think the conditions kind of saved them today. That's what he said. He said the conditions and the officials were responsible. He wanted the pass interference on that one where he went down. And then I really don't think the Cleveland Browns are a good team at all. And so there you go. You got the full Jameis Winston experience
you did.
Last night.
You got it all.
Jameis Winston with the strip sack, with the pick,
the game winning touchdown throw, and then the touchdown run to put him up two scores. Like
it was, it was, It was the complete experience. I have to say, seeing it, I'm not interested in him being my quarterback if I were a Browns fan full time, like next year. I do not want Jameis Winston to be the plan.
No, I think that's fair, but I do think when you're in these set of circumstances, like, give me this
so much better than the other
plan. Correct.
Oh, not even close.
But yeah, that's not.
And who knows where they would be had right. that? He's out of his. I think four starts. He's given him three quality starts.
Yeah.
There was the second game. I think was a stinker, but other than that, he's been pretty good. And Wilson's numbers were good.
Yeah, I did not think he played well.
He didn't play well, and he took four sacks. I think he took four sacks. The numbers were, 21 of 28, 278 yards. Obviously hits Calvin Austin with the touchdown pass to put him up 19-18. But I don't think he played particularly well. And Myles Garrett, out to prove that he was the best pass rusher on the field, they have a little bit of a rivalry, TJ and Myles Garrett. And Myles Garrett, with three first-half sacks, he was terror.
He was terrifying. I weirdly thought the scariest play he made wasn't even the one that, like, it didn't even register as a stat, but it was the fourth down when he was chasing right. Russell, and it's like the way the camera looked, it's like that was the most terrifying thing, because you had this monster just chasing this, you know.
He's more terrifying than TJ Watt, don't you think?
I think so, because it's like size, speed.
It's speed. I'm not saying he's a more effective
correct.
Football player game in,
but
game
in
out.
Terms of, like, if I'm sitting on the other side, I'm just like, that guy scares me more.
But who do you want on your team more? If you could pick one.
I think I would go TJ, because I think TJ plays the run a little bit better. Like, I feel like Miles just basically just chases the quarterback. And TJ does to a certain degree, but I think he plays the run a little bit better.
I was happy for Browns fans. Of course, whether they wanted to win or not, who knows? Like, if I'm a Browns fan at that point.
I think any division game.
Against the Steelers, yeah. The freaking hated Steelers on Thursday night, you take some pleasure out of that win, even though... It's gonna hurt your draft pick. All right, we've got Jason Smith is gonna join us in the next segment. We've got Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock, and then Jeffrey's bets after that. I will remind you, you can wager on the NFL. You can wager on the Har Bowl, Jeffrey. We've got Glicked this weekend, mm-hmm. and we've got the Har Bowl as the Ravens play the Chargers.
It's a Thanksgiving tradition.
And you can wager over at FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. If you're new to FanDuel, you wager and win on a $5 bet, you get $150 in bonus bets plunked right in your account. Something to be grateful for right there. $150 in bonus bets if you hit on a measly $5 bet. Head on over, put together some same game parlays. You can use the pre-built same game parlays they have over at the FanDuel site. All you have to do is go to FanDuel.com/Calkins, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, to make every moment more. FanDuel is official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older and present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. When we return, Jason's going to join us. We'll do that next. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Black Friday has officially started at Blinds.com, and the savings are huge. Right now, you can save up to 50% site-wide and score premium doorbusters and a free professional measure. Don't wait. These deals are happening right now. Swapping out old blinds for custom window coverings is a small project with big results, and Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. With Blinds.com, there are no long lines or confusing quotes. You shop online without sacrificing quality, style, or service. One of our design experts can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. We can even handle everything from measure to install. Plus, you get window treatments for your whole home installed for just one low cost. With over 25 million windows covered, Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Blinds.com's Black Friday sales event is happening now with our best deals of the season. Save up to 50% site-wide and score premium doorbusters and a free professional measure at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Jason Smith. Jason and John every single day from 11 till 2. Before I talk to Jason, we did have some breaking news over at the Daily Memphian. The Live Nation is going to operate a new live music venue in Crosstown. Live Nation is coming to Crosstown. They're going to build a 35,000 square foot venue at 431 North Claybrook Street. It's right across from the Crosstown Concourse parking garage. This is according to Todd Richardson of Crosstown Concourse. 1,300 capacity venue. Going to bring concerts, comedy shows, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We'll talk to Chris Harrington about this more, but that's some good news for the city of Memphis. Joined now by Jason Smith. Jason, of course, every day from 11 till 2. Memphis Tigers continue to make it interesting, Jason, but they continue to do the things they have to do to build their resume and win respect across the country and even here in Memphis, Tennessee. What did you make of what we saw last night?
Well, I'm just continue to be amazed by how this team looks in the second half. And first half felt a lot like the Missouri game where you're just wondering, wow, you know, where's it gone? You know, I think I've seen this team score 50 points and, you know, 50 plus in three straight second halves, but now here again, they're struggling in another first half. But there they go again, 46 points in the second half, outscoring by 13 points. And it's just so similar to what we've seen the previous three games. And so, if nothing else, it has been characteristic of this team, whatever the adjustments are, whatever, you know, Penny talked about it being effort, you know, that being a lot of the difference in the second half. And you wouldn't think you'd be coaching that, especially with guys as experienced as these transfers that you've brought in, that there would be a letdown in effort because when Memphis, frankly, puts its foot down as it has in these second halves, they look like some dogs, you know, the kind of dogs that we said that Penny Hardaway lacked last year, you know, that kind of, you know, whatever willingness to do whatever, stick your nose in there. PJ Haggerty, you know, not hitting shots all night long, but still battling. And then therefore you there at the end is able to hit a huge three and hit some free throws for you. But a guy that's willing to, you know, do other things. And that's what, you know, that it's sort of that kind of glue. You're getting it right now from basically six guys. I mean, a seventh comes in last night. Baraka ends up hitting a big three you know, for a guy like him that's basically, you know, not been known as a shooter, not a shooter. He hit a big one. They need a seventh and eighth guy desperately. I think we saw that last night against a deeper San Francisco team. But back to that point, it's amazing really what they're getting out of these six guys essentially. And you hit it, I think, Dane Danger for the first time all season. you know, we talked about you could really trust this backcourt, right? That's what you knew through your first three games, or you think you knew about this Tigers team. What you didn't know was in the front court. You know, can Dane dominate? We hadn't seen that yet. And last night, I mean, even the announcers were pointing out how he just looked different out there. He was dominant, and he was certainly the difference. For the first time this season, he was the difference in his game. A couple of huge offensive rebounds, one off the missed free throw, huge inside, and boy, did he look confident last night. So, like you said, man, it's just good for the resume. You know, I mean, this San Francisco team, say what you will about it, picked fourth in the WCC, but had a first place vote and had beaten everybody they played, including Boise State, picked to finish, win the Mountain West, beat them by double digits. And so it's a good, another notch on your belt as you head into Maui. And Lord knows you'll have played, you know, more recently than UConn. Maybe you can catch them slipping a little bit because UConn won't have played since last Tuesday. You just got another good test in. So hopefully you'll be ready for that in effort because you lack any against the defending champions, and you figured you there won't be time to come back. UConn, even though they haven't played anybody this season, they're still that kind of good.
I will say, watching the first half, you know, you wonder, well, you tell yourself over and over again watching it, you think, well, they've proven they can do it in the second half. But, like, I don't know that I have complete faith.
They shot 24%.
It was awful. But they didn't, like, when it was like 7 points for forever, right? And they don't give up defensively, even while they're struggling. Like, they're bringing the other team down with them, you know, like they're in the mud together. So I do think that's one of the things about this team that they, you know, the defensive effort felt to me like anyway, it was there the whole time, which allows you to stay in striking distance. I don't know. Like where are you in terms of what do you expect in Maui?
I'm still expecting a loss just because of the caliber of who you're playing and how are you going to, you know, containing Caravan, Alex Caravan's, I mean, 6'8 can do it all for a team that is limited on guys. We saw Jordan get into foul trouble last night. You don't have a Tyreek Smith, so another body potentially that you could have thrown at a guy like that. You know, you're shorthanded still in the front court. I love the way Moose is playing and the energy he brings, but you can't just depend on Moussa Cisse to guard every other, you know, team's big guy. I mean, Moussa needs to be around that basket, you know, swatting away shots. He's not going to be able to hold Alex Caravan. So I'm expecting loss. I just, again, to go back, though, you know, to sort of your point, I mean, first half, they can't hit a thing. And I'm going to tell you where really doubt started to set in for me, Jeff. I thought this would maybe be a little bit different against what was clearly the best team they've faced so far,
yeah.
Is that I think they had cut it. They had a chance there to cut a four-point lead to like a one-possession game. There with less than 2 minutes left, Dane throws it away.
Yeah.
San Francisco ends up going up by 9, where you had a chance to cut it down. And I said, uh-oh, like they've been playing with fire all season. This is a good team that's deep. There are, you know, you've got signs of foul trouble already. They're not going to be able to kick them. And then they come out and score, you know, 10 straight. I think it's 10 straight points.
10 zip,
to start
yeah.
the second half. And so that part's been remarkably consistent. But, again, you just figure with the caliber opponent you're now about to face, you're not going to be able to get away with that. And so I'm just – whatever they're saying at halftime, like whatever is going on with the adjustments I talked about with Jeffrey yesterday, clearly this new staff has to be a part of that. You wonder how much Mike Davis – is contributing. Clearly, Penny Hardaway is saying what they need to do at halftime, and then they're doing it. I mean, ultimately, you know, Penny is making the adjustments, but I wonder whatever they've got right now in terms of what they're doing at halftime, making adjustments, whatever speech is being given. We know Tyrese gave one during the Missouri game. It's working. But again, you're going to have to, you know, UConn's not going to let you, you know, get down by, you know, double digits in a first half and come back. It just doesn't feel that way. But again, all tests passed so far. And I'm sure, you know, that's not something we necessarily expected, especially with two essentially road games in the mix here over this first four games. So you got to get all of them you can get, Jeff, in this non-conference, right? I mean, John was talking about before this preseason, my partner, that, you know, if they finished just above 500, meaning 7-6, he thought they'd be doing pretty well. Right now, they're clearly on pace to do better than that. And hopefully, yeah, man, this non-conference will be something you can, unlike last year when wins over Michigan and Arkansas didn't mean anything. Well, now you need San Francisco to keep on winning. You need Ohio, which I think just suffered another loss. Like, yeah, you know, you need these teams that you beat, UNLV, to go out and be good now that you've notched them in your belt. But you've controlled what you can. You've gone out and started 4-0.
Is the thing that worries you most depth/health?
Yes, yes. Because you've got six guys right now. PJ and Tyrese are logging so many minutes. That's why I've talked about it. Like, we looked at that, what we'd like to call that best Penny team, because of how the roles were so defined and guys knew them, and essentially it was easy because you just fell behind Kendrick and DeAndre. That team played eight guys 17 or more minutes. This team's got about six guys doing that. Again, Baraka Okogie and PJ Carter are the likely two candidates. It looked like Penny kind of tried to use Jared Harris, the freshman, there early, but I think we can tell. I don't think he's ready to be part of a rotation. My point is that as much as we like a shorter rotation for Penny, six is too short. This has been more by necessity. It needs to be closer to 7 or 8 like it was in 22-23. I still think that's a nice short rotation. It's the number of guys, frankly, that Penny needs. It'll help you take some of this, you know, all of this burden that is on Tyrese, that is on PJ to carry you, especially with, you know, again, those two guys, they're essentially, you know, they're perimeter guys, Baraka and PJ. What you don't have, Jeff, where right. The concern is still is, do you have enough bodies? I think when Tyreek Smith left, you know, we all looked at it as like, okay, they'll be fine. I mean, a role player wants, I don't know, Gary, whatever Gary said, $10 million it feels like, or $750,000, whatever it is. Hey, yeah, Memphis better off without it. We're seeing now how much they needed that extra body, and specifically a guy like him, 6'8", athletic, who you could just throw out there. Just if not for anything else, Jeff, the 5 fouls alone. You saw the Tigers last night in foul trouble. So the concern is still the depth in the front court.
Yeah. I feel pretty good about him, though.
I feel pretty good.
You look back.
33 at KenPom. Yeah, it looks good right now.
You look back at that Kendrick year, and they had their own injury issues. He had his injury issues. Alo had his injury issues. Like, that's what happens when you're counting on, you know, when you're counting on that tight group. And we know that, Penny at least told Parth that one of the reasons for the slow start this time, and who knows whether this is true or not, but it does make some sense. It's a little more curious because they start slow every time. But he said this time one of the problems is you're not getting these, you know, Haggerty and Hunter can't practice.
Yeah. I mean, right now, I think it's probably for the best, whether and clearly they're banged up. But I mean, I'll always recall the story. DJ Stephens was so banged up one of those years with the shoulder and everything else. It felt like he was an old man when you watched him in practice because he was always on the bike. And then he did not practice. And yet you'd get him in games, and you saw DJ. I mean, his story's crazy where he was playing center because of the way he could block shots. But the point was he didn't practice because of how fragile he was. It's a little bit different here, but he could turn it on in games. And I think right now, with really your reliance on six guys, and it's probably the best thing for them that you don't have them out there, you know, getting worked in practice a little bit. Those guys right now, listen, you know, PJ, it's funny you mentioned that Kendrick Davis team because to me, and I know they're different players. I'm not trying to say they're the same player. The comp is obviously different. But PJ Haggerty it's like Kendrick Davis in that even if the shots are not dropping, right, you still trust him. And late in that game, when I thought PJ Haggerty was about to have his first bad, you know, game total, he ends up getting huge baskets for you. He doesn't have the 3-point shot of Kendrick Davis. But my point is, when things are breaking down, PJ Haggerty's the kind of guy you can trust to go. It didn't feel like they had that guy last year. You wanted Javon Quinterly to be that guy, and for a couple of games, he hit a couple of shots. But then it got crazy at the end of games, you know, especially through AAC play. And so it just feels like much in the same way you could trust Kendrick, you can trust P.J. Haggerty that at some point he's going to come through for you when you need. And the crazy thing about him is he's just a sophomore, right? That Kendrick had been through the wars at SMU. Like, he had, you know, played big games. P.J.'s doing this, you know, having come over from a losing program. And, I mean, in every exhibition and now through every game, even though, you know, even when he shot the ball poorly, you've been able to trust him to make plays for you down the stretch. And, you know, you need guys like that. And the best thing about that backcourt is Tyrese Hunter recognizes it. And this isn't a deal where Tyrese says, hey, I've been to the NCAA tournament, I've made runs, I need to be the alpha male on this team, I need to be leading. No, he's already recognized. We need to get behind this sophomore. And so, yeah, man, if PJ can keep producing like this, it's going to give you a chance in just about any game you play. Now, again, we're about to see, you know, what it looks like against really good competition in games that actually count. Remember, foul troubles was an issue against Alabama.
Right.
You know, it. So I mean, when you've got that many guys and UConn's going to run guys at you, that is your main concern, is do they have enough bodies to get through this tournament?
And last thing on this, do you? And it's this is impossible to measure. I guess you can look at home crowds and get a sense of it. Do you get the sense that the larger Memphis community is starting to buy in on this team? How does one measure vibe, hope, interest, enthusiasm, any of that? But what's your sense of it?
It's so tough for Penny this season because of what happened last year. Let's just be honest about this. Because of the fact that those that weren't with him did buy in when you were 15-2 and number 10 in the country. And those that were like, see, told you he was a good coach. I mean, Penny, as John has pointed out, had guys saying at one point last year he should be coach of the year. And it's what happened afterwards that I would not blame any Memphis fan if they are here still at a point right now on November 22nd with this team 4-0, and they're saying, I still want to wait and see, right? Because, again, last year was such a letdown, was such a train wreck. And so, if Jeff, we talk about it all the time, that fear of investment, right? That fear of investing your heart into another Tigers team and it having the rug pulled out from underneath you. I would not fault or blame any Tigers fan if they're sort of still there and they want to see it against the defending champ. They want to see it against, maybe a North Carolina in the title game if you should be so fortunate. I can understand that. And so, there's a part of me that's still there. Right, I want to see you do it against the big boys, and then frankly, it's not it's like we've said, they got through the non-conference 11-2 last year. Supposed to be over. Frankly, Penny had put too much focus on it in terms of from a mindset standpoint, because he had told us and he had told that team our season is the non-conference, and they went and played the conference season like it didn't matter. Right. And so even Jeff, I could say right now, hey, let's see these tests against Maui. We won't know, Jeff, until they're dominating this conference like they should. Right. That be at a point where we can feel real good about Penny Hardaway being back in the NCAA tournament and maybe making a push again. That's just the way it is, because last year is so recent. You just can't throw that out the window. Penny's had some great years here. In terms of those first five, he had built a culture and identity. He's getting back to that this year, I think, especially defensively. But come on, man. I mean, you know, this thing, we can't judge you until you're rolling the AAC, especially with the way UAB is looking, Jeff. They look absolutely dreadful to be the free.
Yep.
Right. And so this should be your conference. Let's see you roll that, too.
Thanks, Jason. Appreciate it, man.
All right, man. Yep. Take care.
It is interesting, Jeffrey, because both Penny and Ryan Silverfield are living with the context of their larger careers here, right? Like,
sure.
Like Ryan could very well be asking, why the hell is a 9-2 good enough in Memphis, right? And Penny could be asking, why aren't people behind me here? I'm a hometown guy. I've got a 4-0 team. Like, why isn't there more enthusiasm? And the answer is, for both of them, with Ryan, it's that you've never been to a conference. It's you've never been to a conference championship game, and this was supposed to be the year. So you're really, this is a year's a disappointment only in the context of every other year that has happened. And for Penny, he's living with the repercussions and the PTSD of what's happened in previous years as well. Sort of different situations.
It's the same. It takes the link of the same psychological element.
Yeah. All right. We are, by the way, I did that. We're going to talk to Chris Harrington in a moment. Then we're going to do Jeffrey's bets. I mentioned at the beginning of this segment, we had the breaking news that Live Nation is going to be working with Crosstown Concourse to create a new facility, concert, auditorium sort of place, 1,300 capacity venue right near in a parking lot near Crosstown Concourse. And so, Jeffrey, over at the Daily Memphian story, they have a list of the capacities of other
venues
in Memphis. So I want you to put these in order of biggest to smallest. Get out a pencil. Ready? And here are some of the venues. The Mike Rose Theater at the University of Memphis. The Cannon Center the Orpheum, FedEx Forum, and Mud Island Amphitheater, which of course isn't operating. But we'll put it, well, that's the list. And that leaves out the Halloran Center. I'd be interested in what the Halloran Center is. It wasn't on this list. It sort of feels like it could be.
Is
not
Cannon
unlike
Center the
that's the one at the where the symphony plays in the basically in the convention center.
Okay, yeah, that's
that one.
Convention center was Russia.
All right, let's go biggest to smallest.
All right, FedEx Forum's the biggest.
That's clearly 19,000. What's the next biggest?
I believe it's going to be Mud Island.
Mud Island is 5,000. Yeah. What's the next biggest?
I'm going to say Orpheum.
Orpheum. Damn, like there's nothing about which you're not an expert. Orpheum 2300.
And then this is where, because I've.
And so then you're down to Micros and the Cannon Center.
I'm going to say Cannon Micros, but I don't even know.
My God, you're a genius. Cannon Center 2000, Micros 1000. And what did I say this was going to be?
1300, so it's going to be in between those two.
1300. I do wonder what the Halloran Center capacity is, because that feels like it would be roughly in that ballpark. But the headline from Sophia Surratt over at the Daily Memphian, Live Nation to operate new live music venue in Crosstown. You can read about the breaking news. I've tweeted it out. You can read about it.
Halloran is apparently 361.
Oh, it's small.
Yeah.
Intimate.
I definitely thought it was bigger than that.
Well, and there's also the Crosstown Concourse has an auditorium that is built into the place right now that already exists, a 417 seat black box theater.
What's Graceland Live, like 1500?
I don't know what Graceland Live is. Don't know what Graceland Live is. I bet it's got to be in that same. I bet it's 1500.
Yeah, 1600.
1600. This is basically like that. I presume this. I suppose because Live Nation runs it, it'll be booked.
That's
what will make it. But anyway, we'll talk to Chris about that and more. Talk to him about the Grizzlies, and some other stuff, including the film scene this weekend in Memphis and Justin Timberlake. All of that when we return. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.